The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And football recruiting is on fire. Today was National Signing Day. And here to talk about that with us is our dear friend and fan recruiting expert. He is the National Director of High School Recruiting for SI, Andrew Nemec. Sir, how are we doing?
I'm good. I'm tired. I didn't sleep very well last night, but that's kind of par for the course before the early signing period.
Has the world of NIL, has it made kind of the lead up to this? I mean, I know there's always been flips, but is this world we're living in now, is it more precarious than ever when you're getting close to pen to paper?
I know this is like not the easy answer, but it's actually both. It's both easier and more complicated. For a lot of kids, they've already kind of agreed to NIL terms, so you know they're not going to flip. Essentially, they've signed before they've signed. They've just signed with actual money involved. For kids who haven't yet committed, if that starts a bidding war, that makes it much, you know, more difficult to predict. And so it's actually both ends of the spectrum, because you get guys that have been kind of essentially locked in to six-figure deals for months already because of NIL. And they kind of don't publicize that. And so you know guys are going to be headed somewhere. But again, the flip side of that is the bidding war guy, where you're like, wait, school number 5 got him on signing day? Did not see that coming.
So can you explain just generally how it works with NIL now? I mean, the coaches are going out recruiting like they always do, trying to get the kid to come play there. But when does NIL come into the picture? How does that get negotiated? And what's the timeline of all that?
It's complicated. It's nuanced. I think generally programs have a budget for a recruiting class. They have a budget for their current roster, and that's retaining the current roster and keeping guys happy. And you kind of know going in, you know, say, I'm going to make the numbers simple because it's easier to follow. You have $10 million for a recruiting class. Okay, we have $1 million at the quarterback position. Let's go recruit guys and find, you know, 3-4 4-star quarterbacks, high 4-star guys that we like. Let's engage them during an unofficial visit, kind of find out from their representation how much they're looking for, and make sure we hit that number. If we go double that number, we got to find that money or pull that money from somewhere else, receiver, offensive line, tight end, et cetera. Or we go under that number, and now we've got more money to work with for the offensive line. That's kind of how it works. And so it is a multi-year process that can be sped up with a quick phone call. If you need a guy, hey, we're sitting on $2.5 million on signing day, and we'd really love to add a 5-star receiver. Any interest? Sometimes you can pull that off, but it's rare. It usually takes some back and forth.
So it really starts with the NIL now. I mean, that's...
I think there has to be interest. There has to be an unofficial visit. You can meet with a collective during an official, at least, unless they've changed the rules very, very recently. During an official, you weren't allowed to meet with a collective. So sometimes you'll see kids, especially in the spring, they'll take an official visit, and then they'll immediately take an unofficial visit the next weekend. That's, hey, the official visit was really good. You guys are a serious contender.
Yeah.
Let's sit down and talk money.
Let's talk
That's
money.
Generally but, what's happening.
But at this point, like when you're dealing with 4- and 5-star kids and you're dealing with big boys, Ohio State, Bama, Georgia, you know, Oregon, everyone is essentially in the ballpark. So it can't just be about money because everyone's offering close to the same money. I'm assuming that's where it comes into the building relationships, the fit, all of the other things that, a kid would normally have picked before NIL.
Yeah, and here's the dirty little secret. Guys were getting paid before.
Yeah.
So now it's just that people know about it, and so everybody wants to know, and there's more structure behind it because there has to be, because every kid is looking for some amount of money, or most kids are looking for some amount of money. So there has to be a structure behind it because you're paying taxes on it, and there's a paper trail, et cetera. But kids have always gotten paid, and that's always been the case and will always be the case. So this idea that this is entirely new and like, how the heck does this work now that there's money involved? Well, kids show interest in a school, and as things escalate, the discussion about how much would it take for you to come here starts up again. And now it's more formal, and there's often agents or a collective that's negotiating that number. But this is essentially just a more structured version of what the SEC has been doing for their entire history.
Well, Oregon's been ramping it up. Obviously, it's been a long build here. But Dan Lanning seems to have taken recruiting at Oregon to the nuclear level. How has he done it?
Well, you know, I think it came in waves. I think Willie Taggart showed Oregon that they needed to kind of catch up to modern recruiting tactics. I think Mario Cristobal showed that you can be a relentless national recruiter, but to take a souk term, he's kind of a red ass about it. Like, Mario Cristobal comes across as a dude who wants you to know how hard he recruits. Like, there's nothing really particularly cool about Mario Cristobal's recruiting. He's just relentless. And I think Dan Lanning has brought more of that SEC approach in the understanding an unofficial salary cap. Like, here's our budget, guys. We're not going to go over it. Here's how we balance a roster. We're not going to overspend for a Dante Moore and then spend 6 months losing out on guys. Let's go get a solid 4-star quarterback that maybe doesn't break the bank, and instead we can get multiple good linebackers, multiple good defensive linemen, good DBs, and flesh out this class, and let's be smart. And it is almost an NFL approach, and I do think probably he brought some of the more advanced program-building philosophy from Saban. I think he got a bigger piece of the pie. He understood a bigger part of the machine than Mario Cristobal, and he's been able to take it to kind of the next level.
Well, we were talking earlier today, and like the 5-star tight end that ended up going to Kansas State, his name escapes me, but that they weren't able to flip. We were kind of talking about that because you didn't get him, it freed up some money, and then Oregon was then able to go out and get more than one kid up because of not landing the one. They were able to pivot and stay flexible at the last minute.
Yeah, and you know, who really knows exactly how ironed out things were heading into that. But yeah, when you miss out on a 5-star kid that is rumored to want a pretty big chunk of NIL and you miss out on that kid, it allows you to pivot if you have, again, kind of an unofficial salary cap, and circle back to guys and be like, hey, there's this much more money freed up. You know, I am not in any way confirming those conversations happened. They're certainly not illegal, and they happened all day today. But that is something that certainly can happen. You miss out in the NIL era. If one door closes, you've got an opportunity to open other doors with a bigger offer.
So you land a 5-star quarterback, couple big flips. You let what, the number one and number two receiver in the country? I'm assuming this is the best recruiting class Oregon's ever had.
Yeah, it's number one on Rivals. I believe it's number two on Three. It's number four on 24/7. But the real caveat here is this isn't a very big class. In other words, they've had years where they've got a total class point score that's higher. But according to Rivals, On Three, and 24/7, if you go by all three of them rate players differently, if you go by their metrics of average rating per commit, in other words, how good is the average kid in your class, you know, across the whole spectrum of your class, Oregon's number one by all three recruiting services. So, yeah, maybe on one site, Texas, you know, on three, Texas is higher. But they signed four more kids. And if you just average out how good is your recruit, Oregon's average recruit is better than everybody else in the nation, according to every major recruiting service. It's a remarkable, remarkable recruiting class. You know, it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about Oregon couldn't get a receiver to save their lives. And it was just like, who's the best receiver Oregon's had in 12 years? Jeffrey Mail. And no disrespect whatsoever to Jeff Mail. But if that's the best receiver in your program, you probably don't have an NFL factory on the offensive side of the ball at receiver. Well, today they signed On Three's composite number one and number two receiver in the country. Some of the weak spots Oregon used to have become strengths while they continue to recruit at a really high level at quarterback and running back and some of the positions they always have.
So, and then out here on the West Coast, I mean, obviously the two big rivals with USC and Washington going over into the Big Ten, UCLA. I mean, is there anyone else on the West Coast making any real noise? I know USC got a flip for someone that was going to go to Oregon. They lost a couple other five-star kids that I've seen over the last month that have flipped. But was there anyone else on the West Coast that made any noise?
No, and really, I know this is kind of unfairly ties back to Oregon to some extent. But if you're rooting for Dan Lanning to stay, and if you're an Oregon fan, I can't imagine you're not. One of the real sticking points for Oregon and in Oregon's favor is he kind of has the West Coast to himself. USC, by all accounts, can't get out of their own way when it comes to NIL. The rumor for months was that Jakeem Stewart, who's nicknamed Thanos, was asking for multiple millions above market. So the fact that USC got him might mean they wildly overspent to save what has been a pretty disastrous last few months. They've lost multiple five-star commitments. So if you're Dan Lanning, you can go to Alabama. Not only do you have to live up to a legend's expectations in Nick Saban, maybe you follow Kirby Smart. People expect you to win a title, what, every 3-4 years? And then not only that, but when you're there and you have to win every year astronomical numbers, 12 wins a season, you also have to fight off the budgets of Ole Miss, Florida, Florida State, Miami, you know, Texas, Texas A&M, all those programs down in that area. Really, right now, Dan Lanning has the West Coast to himself. And when you're looking at why Oregon's had so much success, NIL has leveled the playing field to the extent that an Ole Miss, an Arkansas, a Tennessee can put together money and say, let's go get us a five-star and hope he hits, a five-star quarterback and hope he hits, and we kind of skyrocket. And that kind of disperses the talent in the South a little bit. And that's not the case on the West Coast. And I'm not saying Oregon isn't surging, but part of it is that we're not seeing Georgia with 9 five-star commitments, you know, commitments this year, Alabama with 8 five-star commitments. They're more spread out. On the West Coast, they're not. And Oregon's getting all of them.
This is Andrew Nemec, National Director of High School Recruiting for SI. A couple of questions on the text line from listeners. Somebody wants to know about the Wilsonville quarterback, Mark Weipert. He was going to Oregon State, and he flipped to the Ducks. Can you talk about, because they were asking, well, he obviously has much better chance to play in Corvallis than in Eugene. So what happened there? And then the Oford kid from Ohio State, the corner, was that just a bidding war?
Yeah, I think Oregon did a good job of recruiting him, as I understand it. You know, that was a very tumultuous recruitment with...
Which one are we talking about here? Sorry.
Offered,
with okay.
Ohio State, Auburn, and Oregon all in the mix. Florida announced they weren't going to use the buyout money on Billy Napier to get rid of him, and they were instead going to invest. His buyout was $10 million, I think. They were going to instead invest that in NIL. They flipped more than a dozen high-level kids in the last literally like 4 weeks. Offered visited there. So you can make of that what you will. As soon as it was announced, Florida was throwing around big money. Offered took a visit. Oregon ends up on top for him. A little bit of a surprise, but Oregon did a good job of relationship building. In terms of the Wilsonville quarterback, you know, it reminds me a lot of a situation from a few years ago. Westland's Ethan Long, good quarterback in high school, and I talked to him. I talked to Coach Chris Miller at the time, the coach at West Lynn. And I said, he's going to make a great H-back. And they said, no, he's a quarterback. He's going to play quarterback. And I said, you know, I know what kind of caliber Arizona State recruits a quarterback. He's going to make a great H-back. And they said, no, he's going there to try out to be the starter from day one. Well, he got there, and he made it through about 2 weeks of spring practice, and they moved him to H-back. And I think Mark Weppert is a very good baseball player. I think he's got a chance to be a Bryce Betcher type and be a really good strong safety maybe. Maybe he could develop into a linebacker like Betcher. I think his future is more of as an athlete, and I think he's got a chance to be a good two-sport athlete. I'd be shocked, especially with the way Oregon recruits quarterback, even if you're a good high school kid. There's always a Bo Nix or Dylan Gabriel. I'd be shocked if he ended up being a multi-year starter. I don't see a Justin Herbert future for him.
And then I know it did make a lot of headlines, but just kind of a general feel for what Oregon State did. I know Beavs may not be necessarily thrilled about what happened today.
Yeah, I think, you know, Beaver fans are pretty upset with me today. And
again?
Your public enemy.
The last week of interviews. You know, Soup, not to take an off-air conversation, but you were looking at it too and kind of said the same thing. You look at the caliber of recruit Oregon State got, and you said, you know, this isn't my science. This isn't what I do.
Yeah.
But just over the last few years, it started to seem like they were beating out a lot of the Cals and Stanfords and occasionally Washingtons and even USC's and UCLA's for recruits. And this year, the top guys in their class, for the most part, are North Texas, San Jose State. They beat out Montana. It's rough. You know, they had a year, 2021, I think, is their real down year. They finished 109th nationally in recruiting. And it was a very small class. That class had three players that were ranked in the top 750. It's not very good, but it's not a disaster. This year they have zero in the top 750, and they only have one signee that is considered a top 1,000 prospect. It's a down year, and you can look at it and say, hey, they're 65th. Well, yeah, they signed quite a few players. If you look at average rating per commit, it is the worst it's been in 5 years, and it is lower than the class that finished 109th. In 2021, it was a very difficult recruiting cycle for Oregon State.
Last question I have for you, Andrew. You know, we're the home of the Ducks, and obviously Ducks are having a huge season and everything's going great. But there's the flip side where people just look at Oregon oftentimes rather unfairly and just say, well, it's Phil Knight. Well, it's NIL money and Phil Knight. They're just buying everyone. What do you say to those people? Like, how do you say it's not that?
Well, I think it's really stupid to say it's that. I mean, like look at Texas A&M. Texas A&M a few years ago spent $30 million on a recruiting class. And I know that number's true because I heard it 6 months before that, hey, Texas A&M says their budget's $30 million, and their class was like 80th nationally at the time.
Right.
And I went, there's no way. They ended up with the highest rated recruiting class in the history of 24/7 sports. But if you can't coach them, if you can't develop them, what did it bring Texas A&M? And you're telling me that there's more money at Nike than there is with, like, oil tycoons in Texas and things? I mean, everybody has money. And the SEC has had money in their programs and millions upon millions of dollars for years. It doesn't give enough credit to development. It doesn't give enough credit to structure. It doesn't give enough credit to smart money. If you go around and just throw money at kids, guys who don't get as much get mad. They get jealous. And then they don't want to play for you, and they transfer. So you have to be smart about your money to reduce Oregon to money and not speak to development, to not speak to scouting. You know, say, okay, well, they bought, and I'm not saying they did, but say if you're trying to just make the argument, okay, well, they bought Mateo Uiagalelei. Okay, well, a lot of other programs had the chance to get him. And it was a really smart eval because they got him and not a different five-star who flopped, and he turned into a great player. Bryce Betcher's a walk-on. Developed him. He's a star linebacker and a heart of the team. It takes development. It takes a whole lot more than money. And by the way, and this is always the funny one, I've heard this from multiple people. Phil Knight is not the straw that stirs the drink for Oregon NIL. I know there's some involvement there. I don't think he's the number one player. And I think Oregon's perfectly happy for everybody to say, oh, it's Nike. I'm not so sure it's just Nike. And I think Oregon and naysayers who say that are missing a much larger piece of the pie.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I mean, I just think there's a lot of sour grapes out there. I mean, when you're winning and you're kicking butt in recruiting and you're 12-0, people take shots. Yeah. But that was a good answer. Didn't Phil, though, he started the collective, though, right? Wasn't he one of the first to fund the initial collective there?
Absolutely involved. And there's no doubt that he's involved. But to just assume, like, okay, let's make it a pie chart. Okay, well, Nike's 80%. They're not. They're not half. You know, they're a piece, but that's not all of it. And by the way, and another thing, I've heard consistently among people who really seem to know that Oregon is not one or two. I do think Oregon's sitting third-ish in terms of how much money they have to throw around in terms of their collective, in terms of their support. But there are programs with more. And there are programs that are right there. It's not like 4, 5, and 6 are $15 million a year behind. There's a grouping of schools, and they're all elite schools. I mean, you know the names. And they're all relatively close to one another. Oregon's just doing the best at it right now.
Well, who has the two biggest?
I would guess, if I just had to throw it out there, I'd say Ohio State. Based on the way they were able to keep multiple first-round picks in school. And then, to be honest, I have never figured out who the second school is other than it's between Alabama and Georgia, and the other one supposedly is fourth. So if you're looking for a big four in terms of budget for NIL, my understanding, and this could be wrong, my understanding is Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and Oregon are kind of the top four.
And what were the top four recruiting classes in the country? Oh, throw Texas. So four of the five there.
And I've heard that, Texas could very easily be. It's supposed to be exactly. One of the top two is a very prominent SEC school. That's what I've been told. So you're right. That could be Texas.
All right. So interesting times.
Texas. Oh, and by the way, people say Miami's in the top 10. And Ole Miss is up there. Well, guess who recruits really well? I mean, come on. It's not rocket science.
All right. Thanks, Nemec. Appreciate your time.
Of course.
Of course. He's probably so tired of talking about this. Andrew Nemec, he is the National Director of High School Recruiting for Sports Illustrated. And you can hear him here on The Fan after us every Thursday with his recruiting show. It's good. It's interesting.
It's an interesting world. That goes on.
Well, it's a new world. I don't think a lot of people know a lot about it.
No, and I think it's easy to jump to assumptions.
Yeah. All right.
You do got to have money, though. That's the one thing you do. You have to have it.
And they all have it.
Yes.
It's just to varying degrees. I thought it was interesting where he said, it's kind of like for the top teams, it's like.
Salary cap.
It's a salary cap thing where you have to spend it wisely. And if you spend it more wisely than Ohio State you have better depth than tech or whatever, that can be the difference.
Yeah.
You're spending roughly the same amount of money.
You want to go spend $10 million on a quarterback,
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah,
Well, that was Michigan.
Michigan.
And that was Larry Ellison.
Yeah,
because his girlfriend, Larry Ellison said he gave $10 million and he didn't care. He's like, what am I doing? What is this for?
His girlfriend wanted.
His girlfriend was a Michigan person and said, you need to step up and pay for this guy.
Yeah,
so they got Bryce Underwood. And then Underwood tweets out, oh, love I'll never forget the journey to getting to Michigan. Oh, shut up. You got a big check.
But what a journey it was.
What a journey.
It was a great journey.
Anyway, we got a break now. To rest